The Real Map of Iraq. In Baghdad's Iraqi National Museum, left wide open to looters in 2003 by careless U.S. military planners, dozens of wall maps explained Iraq's achievements as the cradle of world civilization. Its invention of writing and the wheel, the birth of mathematics, and the establishment of the first code of laws, Hammurabi's. By most archaeologists' accounts, the museum and the National Library were world-class institutions with unique collections. Even so, the first major building to be surrounded and occupied by American soldiers was the one housing truly vital maps and artifacts, the Iraqi Oil Ministry. Here were thousands of seismic portraits of the nation's oil fields, the subterranean keys to Majnun, northern Ramallah, West Kirna, and many more. World opinion had little difficulty in mistaking U.S. priorities. Primitive oil-related cartography may go back to ancient times, since the area in and around Iraq held the world's oldest oil culture. To the north was Azerbaijan, Persian for Garden of Fire. In Iraq and Iran, governments as early as the 800s appointed a Wali al-Naft, or oil minister, in each region to control, regulate, and tax production. The Persian province of Fars, according to 10th century records, paid an annual tribute of 90 metric tons of oil to light the palace of the caliph. Nevertheless, the oldest relevant map of Iraqi oil fields seems to be the one that ran in the Petroleum Review of May 23, 1914, under the attention-getting caption, "The Petroleum Deposits of Mesopotamia, a Second Baku in the Making." Both oil and asphalt fields were included, as was the Berlin-Baghdad Railway, which Britons feared might give Germany the edge in future regional development. Presumably, even more detailed maps were used by French and British negotiators to plot their wartime division of post-war Mesopotamia. From the 1930s to the 1960s, in the words of oil historian Anthony Sampson, the reorganized Middle East had two kinds of maps. Some showing the names and outlines of the nations, most of them comparatively new, and others showing the region cut up into squares along the coast, marked with the initials IPC, KOC, Aramco, AOC, representing the consortia of oil companies, nearly always including some of the Seven Sisters. To the companies, it was these squares which were the real geography. Saudi Arabia was Aramco land. Iran meant all the seven. Kuwait was Gulf and BP. The oil maps, in short, had long been the ones that mattered. For the U.S. and British oil companies, losing these concessions to the nationalizations of the 1970s was infuriating. The irony with respect to Iraq was that, for one reason or another, the 1970s were the only decade of heavy pumping and large oil revenues. Production had been kept low during the glutted 30s, and it then stagnated during World War II. By 1948, Iraq's commercial production was just one-seventh that of Iran and one-sixth that of Saudi Arabia. Then between 1980 and 1988, the drawn-out Iran-Iraq War curbed output in both countries. Next came the Gulf War in 1991. Followed by the effects of United Nations sanctions from 1990 until the subsequent invasion of Iraq in 2003. Over the last decade or so, this chronology of Iraq's surprisingly limited oil production has become relevant again for a simple reason. Given that relatively little of Iraq's oil has been pumped, most of it is still in the ground. As the dust of the first Gulf War settled, oil companies from Texas to China began wondering which among them would gain access when the United Nations sanctions were lifted. By 1995, the Wall Street Journal and other publications were reporting the American fear that if Saddam Hussein could escape UN sanctions and give Iraq's lush concessions to non-Anglo-American companies, he could realign the global oil business. In the meantime, UN sanctions were essential in preventing Iraq from exporting oil beyond the middling amount allowed and also in preventing competitive foreign investments. So long as the United States and Britain could keep these sanctions in place, using allegations concerning weapons of mass destruction, Saddam could not implement his own plan to extend large-scale oil concessions, estimated to be worth $1.1 trillion, to French, Russian, Chinese, and other oil companies. Most analysts concluded that he hoped to enlist those three nations, which had seats on the UN Security Council, to get the sanctions lifted.